Hello, and welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC. 12 minutes after 9 o'clock on a fabulously radiant Thursday morning. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. It's the Roundtable panel today, and we have the great one with us today. Ira Fussfeld is back. Nice to have you here, sir.
Thank you very much.
I thought you were talking about me.
No, you're just the one.
Oh, okay.
No, he's the great one. And the good one is Rosemary Armeo. She's also here as well.
Nice. Oh, I like that. Good one.
The good one. Yeah. And then the one is Alan Shartok. It's the panel. You can email us if you want. Lord knows we love your emails. It's panel@wamc.org. panel@wamc.org if you want to weigh in, and we would love to hear from you. If you have a chance to watch the feed at wamc.org, and you were watching in the last few minutes, you got a chance to watch us move chairs, which I thought was very entertaining so far. See, Rosemary's chair didn't go up, and you couldn't see Rosemary on the top of the overly tall table here.
Yeah, she was short.
Yeah,
but my head came up to about edge limit.
Really, that's an OSHA thing. You bang your head, the show's over. The Trump administration has lifted federal guidelines that said transgender students should be allowed to use public school bathrooms and locker rooms matching their chosen gender identity. The Wednesday decision is a reversal of an Obama-era directive issued in May. It'll now be up to states and school districts to interpret whether federal sex discrimination law applies to gender identity. A letter sent to schools nationwide Wednesday by the Justice and Education Departments says the earlier directive caused confusion and lawsuits over how it should be applied. The new letter says the guidance is lifted, but anti-bullying safeguards will not be affected. Although the Obama guidance was not legally binding, transgender rights advocates say it was necessary to protect students from discrimination. Opponents argued it was federal overreach. Who wants to go first?
I do. I'm only going into men's bathrooms from now on.
Ridiculous. Oh, you were the one.
Ridiculous.
I've been waiting.
Ridiculous law. And worse than that is that this is Jeff Sessions' first priority. We've got police departments who are killing black people. We have trouble with terrorism. How about all of these gangs and drug dealers that the Trump administration is so worried about? Carnage in the cities, and this is what they're worried about? That transgendered people are going into the bathrooms? Or worse, what I heard today, that we have to protect women from men dressing up as women to attack them in the bathrooms. When has that ever happened? Show me one police report of that ever anywhere in the country. Awful. I'm a little upset about it.
And I saw one thing that I found very interesting, which was that I think I read that Betsy DeVos
was against it.
Was against this change. Trump told her, basically, you have to eat it. You have to do it, and you have to stop giving Sessions a hard time about this. So, yeah. 1 point for Betsy DeVos.
Yeah, it makes you wonder the politics, because Trump himself promised to take care of, to not trample all over transgender rights. Where's Bruce Jenner right now? What does he think of all that? Caitlin
well,
Jenner.
I have some advice for Rosemary. You're more than welcome to use the men's room.
They're disgusting.
If you use it once, you will never go back.
So I have three sons. Yeah, I understand it.
Yeah, and keep your fingers crossed that the one you try first doesn't have a trough. So they still exist in some baseball stadiums.
Aim above this line and you're a fireman.
Yeah. you just mentioned something that I was going to say. For all of his well-earned reputation as a serial liar, one thing that Trump has been consistent on are a number of his campaign promises that he's followed up with just as he said he would. And as you point out, he also said, or among the things he said, that he was going to protect LGBT rights.
Right.
And the fact that he went against it here is troubling. But beyond that, again, I'm going to take the half glasses half full approach. This is coming down the yard. It's here, and he can slow it down if he wants, but this is progress, and the kinds of protections that are now being put in place need to be put in place, and they will be put in place. And whether it's going to take now the next president to do it or cooler heads will prevail in his administration, but he ain't going to stop this. He can stop it short term, but not long term.
I understand that Texas today has a measure in the works to revert back to the old system.
And he has made it a states' rights issue.
So you know that
there are going to be states such as ours that are going to do the right thing on this.
New York has already said, don't worry, it isn't going to happen here.
It's the new federalism in which the various states are going to have to, you know, the Californias, the Massachusetts, and you look perplexed.
No, I'm just listening. It's nice to see you actually in person.
Yeah, the California.
That'll wear off in a moment or two.
California, Massachusetts, New York. These states, these blue states, are going to protect their people. But the Texases of the world are not. And so now you're going to have what we call the new federalism, what I'm calling the new federalism, which is this states' rights stuff that we're going back 50 years, 100 years with.
When was civil rights of any sorts ever advanced under a states' rights system, I ask you?
Yeah, you ask correctly.
Right, and what's going to happen with abortion? Is that going to be states' rights as well?
Of course, of course it is. Yeah, and, you know, New York was, I'm so old, I was here when New York passed the law by one vote from a courageous man, a Republican upstate named Michaels.
Who lost after that.
They threw him right out, of his constituency.
Oh, for more leadership like that, principled and brave.
Every once in a while you have, a profile in courage. But you're seeing precious little of that right now. But, you know, I wanted to go back, if I may, Ray, and I risk talking too much here. I wanted to go back and say, let's take a look at the base, because this is all about the Trump base. He doesn't care about the rest. It's that 38%, and he's going to play to them every single time. And if he feels they don't like transgenders going into bathrooms, he's going to give them what they want.
But how do you govern as a president of the United States with 38% approval rating? You're going to lose. I mean, at some point in time, your Congress is, you're going to lose your Congress. Nothing is going to go through. They're not going to want to follow this guy down the street.
And may I remind you, somewhat unhappily, that Donald Trump is the president of the United States. Right.
And Republicans rule both houses.
Right. And 91%, I read in the paper this morning, when he's attacking the press, for example, 91% of the Republicans who were polled say he's right.
Yep. Structurally, if not numerically, he is very much firmly in control. And that's the danger for us.
There has never been a president, as in my understanding, in the history of this nation or since there has been polling, that has had such a disapproval level, so low a disapproval rate, so soon after he was inaugurated.
That's correct.
I just feel like not so much the Congress, which is gerrymandered and largely protected, but the Senate, I just don't think that they are going to react favorably just because this guy is president. They're a little bit more independent, and 38% and potentially dropping is not a good way to lead this country.
I couldn't disagree with you more. There's almost been no pushback on these.
No, it's early.
Pushback on these terrible cabinet appointments.
But in your decades and decades of watching these
seven
things,
of them, seven and a half.
Have you seen, we saw DeVos this morning or late last night make the statement, more or less, I would say, against the move. Have you seen so many people high up in an administration take contrary positions to the president this early?
It's a brilliant comment from you, Ray, and I want to thank you for it.
That down.
But I happen to think in his diabolical approach to things, Trump knows exactly. He promised the base that he was going to do all these terrible things, but he knows he can't. So he appoints these people. Don't tell me for a single second that when these folks show up and they say NATO's good, even though he said NATO's bad, that he is then firmly in control saying, I want you to go out there and say that to reassure these other people so that I can be seen as having kept my word to the base.
We have to take a break here. It is the roundtable. If you want to join the conversation briefly, it's panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. Alan, Rosemary, Ira on the panel. Ray in for Joe. We'll be back. We just hit the dump button. Okay, we're on the air, so don't worry. We've never had to use the dump button here during the panel, and thanks to Rosemary Armeo.
Oh my gosh! You're kidding!
I hit it. Did it work? Good. I hope so.
You know, you should have an orchestra here like they do on late night, because then when the music picks up, the guests know that we're about to come back
yeah.
on the air.
See, the trick is when the light's on, the light's on.
You guys were talking. I was talking to Ira, yeah. not facing light. Oh, my gosh.
See, watch the
I'm
host, because when he starts talking,
okay, my eyes are glued to you now. I've done so well. How many years have I been yeah. on, and I have such a potty mouth.
Oh,
never
Chuck,
did
please.
It before.
That's,
my apologies.
I've lost the will to live here at 922. It's the roundtable panel. Panel at WAMC.org is the email address. Ira, Rosemary, and Alan are here. Any emails you'd like to read before the torrent begins?
And by the yeah. way, what the word she used is now more commonly used. Anthony Bourdain uses it on CNN all the time.
Oh, it's so. Fine.
No. I would not have ever thought to use it in public.
Well, that's great. Okay, well, lesson learned. Any emails there, Alan?
Yeah, there are.
I'll just go get my defibrillator. We'll be back.
Ay. Julie says, I picked up my TU paper this AM looking for coverage of this very newsworthy filter capacity town hall without Stefanik that took place in Glens Falls yesterday, and there was nothing in capital letters. Is there a group extorting the two not criticize Stefanik, the darling of the GOP? Would love to hear WAMC discussion. I don't hear WAMC holding Elise accountable either. Disappointed on multiple fronts. My paper, my radio, my representative. And that's from Julie. Come on, Julie. Calm down a bit. First of all, we have discussed this again and again and again.
That's so awful.
What'd you say? You can't?
You can't say that to women. Calm down.
What can you say?
You can say, think of it this way, or here's an alternative view. Like, would you say it to Ray or to Ira?
Yeah,
calm down.
Darn
calm
right.
down, little boy. Just to know you.
I get that all the time.
Too emotional.
I didn't say little boy.
It's implied.
No, it's not implied.
We'll get some letters. You'll see.
Yeah, because you started it. You started it. You cranked it all up.
Well, I'm trying to divert attention from what I did.
Good yeah. By the way,
I know.
Good morning, panel. Just posted this to a friend's Facebook discussion about this. Maybe it's because I'm old and fuzzy, but I have had trouble all along with the concern about being attacked by the transgender person, because aren't they in the bathroom because they feel, think, act as that gender? So why are they interested any more than any other person in the bathroom with attacking you? Sigh.
Good point.
Okay. Dear panel,
yes.
Trump's retraction of the guidelines is being hidden under the states' rights and educational policy issues. Obviously, this is a civil rights issue, not an educational policy issue. Can the states reinstate separate bathrooms for whites and blacks, etc.? Nonsense. Sessions implements his bigotry.
And the email address is panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org.
Well, what do you think about Elise Stefanik not coming to a meeting? And this is not just in New York State. These town angry town halls are happening all over the country. And it's lots of legislators who are running away from their people, saying they're not the people I represent. Is that right?
I'm, in fact, getting more mail about this subject than anything else.
Interesting.
One after another. Because I think there is a motivated group of people who think it is the job of the congressman or congresswoman to face constituents honestly. And as we know, they're between a rock and a hard place. And here's why. They think that they're not going to be allowed to even open their mouths because people will be yelling so loud at them. The people I'm talking to are saying, okay, that may be true. And most of the people, by the way, I think most people are pretty good about this. They say the congressman should be allowed to talk.
Right.
Because we're not fascists. We don't shut people up. But that there's another whole side to this who are saying, no, you don't get it. Things are so bad with Trump that this is the only way we have of protesting, going to these meetings and yelling and screaming and not letting the guy, the person talk. So we've seen the way that this is sort of coming up. I know I wrote on this week for my column. I know that at least one congressman said to me, I wasn't born last night. I know why these folks are here. However, the rock and a hard place for them is they're going to be very, very sorry, as Rex Smith said today to us.
So that morning. Comment is meant to say, I believe this to be a coordinated campaign, cynically all about optics. Is that what that lawmaker, whoever wrote you and
yes.
said?
Yes, a Republican lawmaker said that that's exactly what.
Well, may I quote from this morning's edition of my favorite newspaper, the one that employed me for all those many years. There's the lead story is about a town hall style meeting that is scheduled for Friday night in Kingston, New York, at which they expect 600 people to a local school auditorium. Originally, it was supposed to be at City Hall, and they moved it. And John Faso is not going to show up, and he believes, and I'm quoting him now, he says, I've been around politics long enough to know what it is. I've been around the country, and I've seen around the country the way the town halls have been conducted. They're not productive, and no one believes they are productive. I'm doing meetings. I'm doing small group meetings. I'm doing larger meetings. But he says, look at what's happening. They are shouting and screaming sessions. I don't find to be the productive use of people's time. Now, that's Faso. And as Alan said this morning on the Media Project, Rex Smith believes that John's going to pay a price for not showing up at something like this.
Well, no question that there will be people who are in the middle who voted for John Faso, who prevailed, who will say, no, this isn't right. He should come to the meetings. But so he, at least Stefanik and everybody else on that Republican side, remember who started all of this?
You know, the Tea Party did. It's a very effective method for them, and it's now been adopted on the left. It's definitely planned. There are meetings all over. I go to them that say, go to your district representative and let your voice be heard. And instead, we're getting now, oh, it's not productive to listen to them. They just yell. Try to get through on a telephone call. I make calls every day.
But is it productive?
You cannot get through.
Is it productive if the group doesn't let the person being questioned speak? Well, is that productive in any way?
As you just heard, there are always, the emotions are high, and there are some people trying to shut down the representatives, and that should be stopped. But the representative doesn't even meet with them at all. That's the real solution for it.
Well,
to have a cop take somebody out or a security guard just saying sit down or to exhort the crowd. I mean, these are politicians who know how to handle crowds of people, supposedly.
In fact, I had Paul Tunko here the other day.
Somebody said,
well, yeah, but he's a Democrat. Yeah, well, but remember,
Trump
won most of the district, or a good deal of the district, all the counties. So he had the courage to do it, and he's been through it with the Tea Party people, and he knows it, and he did do what he was supposed to do.
I'm not saying that anybody has to subject themselves to abuse. I get that. But there's no way to get through to some of the leaders. Try to get Paul Ryan right now. Doesn't go to meetings. If you call, you just get an answering machine.
Well, they're on break.
And that's been true since the session began. He doesn't accept email. He doesn't accept letters, or who knows what happens to letters. So what's the message to us, the people who are newly engaged and energized? It's that they're not listening to you. All they want to hear from you is on election day when you pull the lever or whatever the equivalent is, and that's it.
We have time for maybe one letter. We have to break in 33 seconds.
Okay, so Edward says, I'm a tractor-trailer driver from Delaware. I drive through Pittsfield, Mass. Once a week and always get a chance to listen to your show. I wanted the group to know that I love, love, love your show. Rosemary is always on point. I wish I...
off the air.
I wish there was a way I could listen all the time. Well, you can. You can listen online.
Sure, you can.
Get that thing in your car.
Get the Bluetooth on your stereo in the truck. Okay, well, we're going to take a break here, Alan, but I want you to hold those emails close. And then after we break for the British News, we'll be back. Hello and welcome again to the Lenny Bruce Hour. It's 9:34 on a Thursday morning. God, it's beautiful outside. It's sunny and spring-like and just an altogether lovely day. Insert your own swear word in there in the sentence. It'll work out fine. The authorities in North Dakota say Dakota Access Pipeline protesters set about 20 fires on the day their longstanding camp was scheduled for closure. They say at least two explosions resulted. A 7-year-old boy and a 17-year-old girl were taken by ambulance to a Bismarck hospital to be treated for burns. Police say they arrested about 10 people in a confrontation outside the camp. They earlier said 9 people were arrested. Officers didn't move into the camp to make arrests despite a 2 p.m. deadline that had been set to close the camp ahead of a potential spring flood. Many other protesters left the camp voluntarily earlier in the day. Officials had arranged buses to take them to travel assistance centers in Bismarck, but they say only 4 people accepted that offer. I know, Rosemary, you emailed in the middle of the night, said, look, I want on this.
Yeah. You know, we have listeners who say we don't talk enough about Standing Rock. And this is a benchmark in the protest. And it seems like they won at the end of the Obama administration. They rolled back the effort to build a pipeline in this very disputed area. And now Trump came in and undid it all, and the protest is going away. It's very sad, I think.
Ira,
I agree, and it concerns me. The environmental impact,
yes,
of these pipelines concerns me, much like fracking concerned me. You know, there are certain things in our world where technology doesn't have to be 100% perfect because the ramifications may not be dire. But, you know, if you have a fracking incident that impacts the water supply, or in this case, if you have an oil spill that does the same and damages the environment, it's nasty stuff. You know, that having been said, boy, had they not, as I understand it, the only piece of the pipeline, the entire four-state
right.
length, is this particular
piece. It's
this
one piece, right.
Thus, the rest of the construction has already been completed. I'm not sure how much that impacts whether or not they have to or should finish the rest of it. But it bothers me that this kind of technology is in use.
The protest is not ridiculous. There have been pipeline spills throughout our country and Canada. Particularly this kind. And it's not as if the pipeline always had to go through this route. It was moved here from another route when, I don't know if this is a coincidence or not, but white residents protested.
I was going to say, it coincidentally went through the Indian reservation.
Exactly. And, I mean, let's, for fracking for a minute, I think the two are related, mm-hmm. pipelines and fracking. It's for fossil fuel mm-hmm. that no longer is required. In fact, the pipeline would carry fuel to other countries. We wouldn't even be using it in the United States. It really helps a Canadian firm. Look at what's happening with fracking. There are earthquakes all through Oklahoma, widely fracked, home of Mr. Pruitt, our new EPA director or secretary. And there are earthquakes in Oklahoma. That is from fracking. Why are we going to risk the environment, risk water supplies, for fuel that we do not need? It's solely corporate greed. I feel like a hippie again because I am on the side of the protesters. They seem very reasonable to me.
It also brings up the way in which this country has a history. You know, Angela Merkel in Germany has made it clear, really, by admitting a million people into mm-hmm. the country, that they have a history that really does need some adjudicating. And they do. I mean, you know, they were the Nazis. Their kids aren't, but they were. And she knows it, and she's trying to do what's right here. We, in this country, have a terrible history with the Native Americans and what we did to them. And so, in addition to all the science you're quoting, there is this reminder that these are sacred grounds, that this is terrible stuff, and that this is one more example that we haven't learned a thing.
Oh, that's so right. And where are all the religious freedom, I was going to say nuts, advocates in Indiana and other places? Why are they not standing up for Native Americans who are saying, respect our spirituality, too? Why is it such a bad thing that they're doing?
Can you imagine
that they're doing this?
Can you imagine if there was a plan to build a pipeline through
Arlington Cemetery? Is the usual.
I guess they couldn't think of anything better, but people wouldn't be silent.
The email address here.
So
is
we don't have. I'm sorry, we don't have the opposite point of view here. It's very liberal here. So yeah.
I think Ira did a pretty good job of saying what some people are saying. You know, after all, most of the pipeline is built, and people are always free, of course, to write in and to give us
right.
the other side.
And that's why I was going to give the email address, which
is please,
panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. And from time to time during the program, we like to listen to what our listeners had to say. And this is one of those times,
right.
Alan.
And
an
here comes
time.
Ian with some more of them.
That's great.
Okay, so this is good. Yeah. Okay, Rosemary, your faux outrage is nothing more than propaganda of the uneducated left.
It isn't faux, and I'm not uneducated, so okay.
Hang on, which faux outrage are we talking about here?
Which one?
Yeah, that's true. You've picked the issues just to rouse me today.
Yeah, okay. And we get these letters. And I get a few of them. Ira, keep spinning on your faux knowledge on the subject. I'm sure you saw the video with all the people like you proclaiming with complete confidence that Trump would never be elected. Just know that 50% of the audience thinks you are all BS. A sweet letter.
Well, apparently we can say the actual words, so, you know.
Faux is in the same letter used twice?
Mm-hmm. Faux, yes.
Rosemary and I, as editors, would have edited at least one of them.
Absolutely.
Unless it was a French publication.
Well, maybe. Even there.
Okay, and Raymond says, not this Raymond,
okay,
but another Raymond.
I understand.
Says, conservatives love states' rights except when it comes to immigration and sanctuary communities and when it comes to marijuana. And then we heard from Peter, who says, I can't stand the thought of Alan in pain.
Mm. We read that one.
I read it to you before. I did not read it on the air.
Oh, okay.
Okay, yeah.
I'm getting off air and on air mixed up today.
Yeah.
You may have noticed.
Yes, you are.
An alternate universe.
I can't stand the thought that Alan in pain. It's great to see him up and about, even if he walks a little like Grandpappy Amos. The head of the clan roars like the lion, but gentle as a lamb.
Grandpappy Amos. I'm not sure I know.
Oh, well, you missed that discussion. That's Walter Brennan from The Real McCoys.
Ah!
You don't get a lot of Real McCoys references.
No, and thankfully so.
Yes.
And Bill says, pity the pettiness of the Trump administration on redistricting transgender children's use of school bathrooms. This is another example of the small-mindedness of the president and his closest advisors, Bill and Kinderhook. Are we going to talk about the Democratic National Committee?
We are indeed, sir.
Oh, because that's an important one.
Yes,
I think,
it's on
really.
The list.
Yeah, okay. I'm so sorry.
That's okay.
I should never have doubted you.
Check your email, and you'll find out that I said that last night.
Stephen says, I heard of a guy who dressed as a woman to enter a ladies' room on the same day he committed voter fraud.
Good letter.
And James says, I think that Trump's base will not stop supporting him until they're hit hard in their pockets. If gas prices or consumer goods price rise because of his policies, then maybe the fever will break. As far as town halls, our local House members need to toughen up and face the voters. The people are the boss. Get to the office. Get yelled at and become better like every other worker. Face the music. Okay. And Peter says, the Trump administration has shown that it is adept at taking from the vulnerable, protection from trans people, hope from immigrants, clean water from all of us. But when it runs out of easy ideological targets, it will face a cold morning when it learns how much harder it is to create prosperity, especially without objective reality on your side. And Carl says, I was at Elise Stefanik's standing room only town hall yesterday in Glens Falls. She wasn't there. Many questions were asked thoughtfully, intelligently, and respectfully. There was no shouting, no abuse comments. Yeah. If she would engage with her constituents, those who agree with her and those who don't, she would diffuse the frustration of those who have tried to communicate their concerns and have had no response from her. And that's from Carol in Argyle, where... everybody wears socks.
How does that work, though? There's all these people are showing up asking questions of whom?
I don't know.
Yeah,
one of those Clint Eastwood things where they put a chair down and
they put an empty suit in one place. In another town hall, somebody stood up and play acted the legislator who didn't appear.
Oh, that's
well. There you go. That's respectful.
A worthy way to spend your evening.
Nicholas says, at Tonko's town hall meeting, a man made some anti-immigrant statements. No one shouted him down. Representative Tonko did not say anything, say everything everyone wanted to hear. No one shouted him. No one shouted him down. Town hall meetings are supposed to be the method by which we, the people, speak directly to our representatives. Those representatives who have something to be embarrassed about have no right to either impugn the motives of those who vocalize their opposition or shut down the process. So, wait a second, if I understand this right, if you shut down the process, then they have no right to impugn the motives of those who shut down the process? I don't know.
I'm not sure. I could parse that later.
I think the violence and shouting has been highly over-discussed, like it's some sort of threat, and it happens a lot. And I think the Stefanik meeting is more like what really happens. These are people who are...
She wasn't there.
Yeah, she didn't come. Mm. And she could have, because there would have been thoughtful, informed questions asked. People are going to these meetings having read up on the issues, knowing where she stands, with serious questions and concerns. And yes, it does get out of hand, but nowhere near like the way it's being portrayed, like
well,
their life
the
is in danger.
Meeting.
Well, that Congressman Louis Gohmert, who's from Texas, he's one of the lesser thinkers in the Congress. I heard him this morning on Morning Joe. They quoted him as being fearful of just what you said, raising the specter of a Gabby Giffords incident. I mean, he's portraying the people thus who might show up at these things and do harm as being violent people when they're certainly not. It injects the threat of violence into these meetings where that threat of violence should not be injected.
Exactly. And you see it on Facebook. I have people talking about, oh, all you protesters, you little snowflakes out there wreaking violence in the streets. I'm sorry, there was an outbreak of violence in Berkeley when the pedophile Milo Yiannopoulos was there, was supposed to be there. That's it.
Well, Inauguration Day, there were the car fires and tear gas and whatnot.
And there were arrests, and it was stamped out in just a few hours, exactly the way we handle
problems. And then the next day when...
Small part of the overall protest.
Right, and then the next day when there were many more people than there were at the inauguration, there was no
problem.
And not
a bit of violence.
Okay.
Yeah.
Panel, a surefire way to get your representative's ear is to bring him or her a large pile of cash.
Survey said.
You know, not wrong in terms of the way the system works.
That's not how you get her. You get a one-on-one.
Right. Alan, what is your opinion of demonstrators parading at Faso's home in Kinderhook after meeting in front of his office? And thanks, and that's from Mary Margaret of St. Augustine. I think people have a right to demonstrate. They will demonstrate. I don't think John Faso probably had any problem with that. But I know I wouldn't want demonstrators in front of my house.
Did you say St. Augustine, by the way? Florida?
St. Augustine.
Wow.
And those kinds of protests were not limited to a Republican, because they were protesting outside of Chuck Schumer's apartment in Brooklyn a couple of weeks ago.
What happened in St. Augustine?
No, that's
where a writer was from.
Just the letters from St. Augustine. Don't you see?
I see. Now
okay.
I see.
Okay.
Now
right.
I see.
Search
for
the fountain of youth.
And Cody said, did I hear that correctly? The self-confessed sexual assaulter in chief has signed a bill ostensibly to keep people from attacking other people in the bathroom.
It wasn't a bill.
Okay. What'd you say?
It wasn't a bill. He didn't sign a bill.
Executive order.
Executive order. Yeah.
Have you talked about that little executive order signing ceremony? It's sort of like the king of some nation, where he gathers around some his people around him, signs it, and then displays the order in front of the court.
That's what Alan does with the paychecks every 2 weeks.
It's
pretty impressive.
All theatrical. It's Trump TV.
The email is panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. Hey, let's take a break, and then we'll come back and change gears and talk about the DNC, the selection of the new chief. Welcome back to the program. It's the Roundtable on WAMC. 9:48 is the time. It's the Roundtable panel. Rosemary Armeo, Ira Fussfeld, and Alan Chartok, and you at home. panel@wamc.org if you want to send us a quick email. Just days before Democrats pick a new party chair, the contest to head the Democratic National Committee remains fluid as national leaders grapple with how to turn an outpouring of liberal protest against President Trump into political gains. As Democrats meet in Atlanta, a tight race between frontrunners Tom Perez, former Labor Secretary, and Representative Keith Ellison, a Minnesota congressman, marks the first heavily contested battle to run the organization in recent history. The contest comes with Democrats facing a power deficit in Washington and around the country after years of losses in Congress, governors' mansions, and state houses, while also having no unifying national leader since former President Barack Obama left the White House. In a forum hosted last night on CNN, the candidates avoided taking shots at one another, instead blasting President Trump, offering general promises to rebuild party infrastructure and pledging to reconnect with voters. Did you guys watch?
I did not. Was that a New York Times story?
It's in the New York Times.
Yeah, I'm wondering how they determined that Perez and Ellison are the front runners.
That's AP.
AP.
AP says that.
I wonder what they're basing that on.
Well, let's put it this way. There's some real, very difficult choices to be made here. I mean, really difficult. Because Keith Ellison, as everybody knows, I think I'm right, is Muslim. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah. And you can just see what Donald Trump will do with that, right? Mm-hmm. He's going to go and say, that blast will be there about electing a Muslim as the head of the Democratic Party. I, for one, welcome it. But I am quite sure that there's probably a lot of discussion as to whether or not this is a bad idea for middle America. And
as opposed to the neo-Nazi that Trump has put in the White House.
Well, yes.
Yeah.
And we don't know how that's going to work out in 4 years. However, Perez, of course, assuming that the article is right, a very attractive candidate, Secretary of Labor, Hispanic. And the real question is how to turn people out. Look, if minorities were able to have generated a few percent more in Minnesota, Pennsylvania, Michigan, then Hillary would be in the White House right now. And so do you put somebody up in front of the Democratic Party who is representative of those groups who feel disenfranchised and motivated? Rosemary, you were in a class with me the other day, mm-hmm. and I said to the classroom full of young people, most of whom, by the way, were eligible to vote, mm-hmm. I said to them, will you please stick up your hand if you voted? And by the way, there were many people. It was a real rainbow room. Will you raise your hand if you voted? And there were, you know, a small smattering of half-raised, elbow-crooked hands going up. So at what point is there something that is given to motivate people to turn out? Now, I think we all know that Barack Obama did that when he ran for office. You may not like it. It may not be an attractive concept that you can pull your people, forward if you are like them. On the other hand, this is what they're struggling with right now. Do you go for the middle class sensibility or do you try to get people to turn out?
Yeah, but the most people in this country will not know who the chairman of the Democratic Party is.
Up to now.
And it's very much going to be a behind-the-scenes plotting of a strategy effort. I'm not discounting the importance of the position for that reason, but I don't know how important it is for it to be a recognizable face. I mean, Perez, depending on your point of view, brings baggage or brings all the pluses of being in the Obama administration. But is that what the party wants now going forward? Don't they want to turn the page? I heard Howard Dean the other day supporting the mayor of South Bend, Indiana, whose name I don't remember. It starts with a B. But to your point, Alan, the reason he supported him was because he's young and he believes, Dean does, that he can devise a strategy that will bring the millennials into the tent. So, but it's very much, as I mean, you know much more about this stuff than I do, but I think it's very much a strategic job. And I'm not sure right now that the Democrats are organized or not so divided that they can come together on any
but
one
on,
strategy.
But on the other hand, have you ever seen a contest like this for leadership of the Democratic Party where you've had this kind of attention being paid to this? I think a lot of things have changed. The election of Donald Trump means that I'm seeing people who would no more have written to me and said, Stefanik and Faso voted for a budget bill or something like that with all these other poison pills in them. And in the old days, they would have gone away with it. But now everybody seems to be keeping track in a way they weren't before.
Cable news, with CNN actually organized and televised the debate It's an hour and a half.
Why the heck is this being played out in public? Yeah. We never cared about it before. I do think that's one of the big changes. The other one are these commercials. Have you seen them on television talking about what a great Judge Gorsuch will be? Yeah. We should all be in favor of him. And wow, ACA is awful and we're going to get something better. Republicans are now on air. I haven't seen Democrats yet. I guess they might do the same thing, but they're running campaign ads when there's no campaign in sight. I don't think I really like it.
By the way, who's paying for those Gorsuch ads?
I've forgotten the name of it. It's a PAC. Justices. Yeah, Justice
and the AARP is on Justice the air praising Trump and holding his feet to the fire about protecting Medicare.
So I do think a lot of things have changed, and I'm not so sure that I enjoy seeing. I like all the candidates. I'd be happy with any of them as Democratic Party leader, but why do I care enough to watch a debate about it?
To see how the sausage is made. Yeah. It's just an odd, I think, turn of events to see this.
And there's a lesson in the Republicans who ran how many billions of debates before they finally picked Donald Trump. They went through a hard time with people watching them. They really vilified a whole lot of viable candidates by going through that process. And I'm not sure that Democrats are now not doing the same thing.
Exactly.
I had one Facebook friend last night who said, oh, I'm going to pop up some popcorn and sit and watch the debate. I don't care who gets it, but it'll be amusing.
Yeah,
that's not. Yeah, that's.
But it is. But it is the way it is. And it is democracy. Small d.
True.
There is something to be said for letting ideas come out and compete with each other.
Yeah, I can see that.
So I don't see any reason. And there's also, I hate to say it, I brought it up before at the risk of my life, strategy. There's a strategy. Who do you want to represent you? And there are a lot of political considerations. For example, would you like to win Indiana? You know, so you get a guy from Indiana. Would you like to win the black vote? So you get somebody who is of color. Would you like to win the Hispanic votes? And so there's the strategy, and then there are the ideas. And these ideas are being put forward, and by the way, very eloquently.
Who threatened your life for saying that?
And there's always somebody to threaten your life for saying anything.
Yeah, but enough about the staff.
Yeah. Who have they replaced Rance Priebus yet? Is there a new Republican chairman?
No.
No.
Oh, no. He's there.
Are we going to see that debate on CNN? In a time when CNN is under the microscope from the hard right, is showing the DNC chairman debate?
Well, are there eight people up for chairman?
No, Rosemary's exactly right.
Well, you got to figure Monty Burns is up and somebody
else. No, but Ray, when the Democrats say we're going to define this thing as a democratic race and we're going to allow people to put their ideas forward, that's one thing. But Trump laid his hand on Priebus's head, right, and said, you're it. And so this is false equivalency.
Isn't that always the case that the president in power appoints the party chairman? Barack Obama picked it in the Democratic.
That's right. Well,
if not officially, certainly anointed.
Right.
And by the way, the way that it usually works is the last presidential candidate has a great deal to do with who gets picked.
Right, which is why some people believe Perez has got the edge because it's Obama's guy.
They become known as the titular head of the party.
But Bernie is pushing Ellison.
Yeah, well, that therein lies some of the rub right now is that you still have a Bernie faction and a Hillary faction in that Democratic mix, and they're still not congealing.
We have about 1 minute before break. We'll take a break now, and then we'll get to the letters, Alan.
Okay,
I know you get excited, but just
you're the boss.
Yeah, the email for right now. The email is panel@wamc.org. panel@wamc.org. You're listening to the Roundtable Panel, and we will be back after we break for news. And welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. It's the Roundtable Panel bonus time now. And Alan Chartok on the panel, Rosemary Armeo, and Ira Fussfeld. You at home if you want to wait. .org.
That's true. So did you want me to read it for you?
If you would, sir.
Oh, here's a good one. Dear Alan, glad you are back and getting around. And that's from Naomi.
That's nice.
Yeah, don't you think?
Yeah.
I went all the way to the thousands of emails, and I chose that one and I read it.
Surprising.
Can you tell me why?
Rosemary's anyway. Having none. She's not going to play. She's having none of this.
Okay. Good morning, panel. Did I hear correctly the self-confex sexual... Didn't we read this one already?
Yeah, you sure did.
Sexual assault on chief of sign of bills. Okay, we have
yep.
Yeah, okay. First, Alan made me laugh with this. It's all about bass. Of course, I now have that song stuck in my head.
It's all it's about all, the bass.
Yeah, it's all about the
it's
bass.
It's an old Weaver song.
About the bass, about the bass.
No trouble.
I love that song.
You like that?
The new remake of it, yeah.
Second point. The Republicans don't care what Trump does as long as we pay attention to his theatrics and leave them alone to do what they want to do. They don't care what his approval rating is. Oh, I don't agree with that. I think they do care.
Yeah.
And if, in fact, you're going to see people jumping ship around the next election, if, in fact, they're going to be voted out of office.
The New York Times columnist Tom Friedman was on television last night. He made such a good point that we can complain about it, but Trump is losing really good opportunities to reach across to get more than the 38%. He could have, for example, put, this is Friedman saying, but it's interesting, he could have put two Democrats on his cabinet. There are moderate Democrats who might have worked. He could have said, hey, Schumer, give me your three top health experts. Here's mine. We're going to ship them out to Camp David until they come up with something. We'll see if we could live with it. He didn't even have to pay attention to it. I think he is just wrapped with the giant crowds. He doesn't look at numbers. He interprets them to his benefit even when the numbers go against him. Look, he thinks he won all three debates.
As Lucille Ball puts it, yes, and that may be a little bit of a mental health issue.
Well, but he won the election, so he...
That's exactly what I was about to say. Before
there's the mic.
Before you jumped
unless
in...
Unless you're a Nepalese throat singer, it's not going to work out.
Before you jumped in mercilessly... Before you jumped in mercilessly,
I'm sorry.
And made the point, and knowing full well that I would never forget, I would never remember what I was going
anyway,
to say. But he won the election,
right?
And he does not think guys like that do not think that you go out after you've won an election and do it another way. That's his point.
Yeah,
and that's what.
Well,
it's
he's also said beyond what I think. At least Alan and I agree, or some sort of mental instability. He is said to be very stubborn. And the question came up this week again after he finally, in more of a full-throated way, denounced anti-Semitism and the various threats around the country. Mm. After having not said anything, given three other opportunities in the prior days, and then he in doing so, he says to the NBC reporter when he was asked about it, he says, yes, I'm very much... I very much deplore this, and I say it at every opportunity. Well, no, he doesn't. He didn't.
That's
he just
riot.
Right within the last 2 days, he had three opportunities to say it. And there is a working theory that people really don't believe that he is anti-Semitic, but he gets himself into a position and is stubborn, and he won't move off of it.
Well, we've switched from his propensity to lie or inability to see reality, whatever you want to put it, and his complete failure to reach out in any way to the other side.
Yes, it's really
there are
a lot of reaching out done in the beginning of the Obama administration?
Yes,
every
really,
administration.
Absolutely,
oh,
at the
it.
Beginning of it.
Oh, okay.
No, that's
not that whole business. We won. Get
right.
over.
That's not true.
I see.
In the beginning of the Obama administration, he did reach out to Republicans. He was soundly rejected. And I have held him responsible for that because he's the one who promised that I would be nonpartisan, I would bridge the gap. And then he goes, oh, it's too hard. The Republicans won't work with me.
And then he gave
which
up.
Is true, but why did he expect that they would? But here, there's not even the pretense of it. Trump is not even making the slightest olive branch. Tell me one line in his... inauguration address that was reaching out past his base. Tell me
and then
one
how
line.
How many of these victory rallies has he had? Not to celebrate and it's like, well, we won the election. Let's talk about it again.
Yeah, Alan, you're raising your hand. It's very
thank
polite
you,
of you, by the way.
Thank you for calling on me, Ray.
Yes.
No, I wrote a column about this very thing for this coming week in my New York State column.
This is the one that will appear in the Sunday Freeman?
It will.
Oh, I thought you were writing about angry town hall meetings. How long is this column?
He writes a lot of columns.
Ah.
He's got one in the Berkshire Eagle.
No.
I only read the Beetle Bailey.
Anyway, the point really is, when I wrote this, I was completely transfixed by Trump walking in, first of all, declaring he's running for president 4 years in advance.
Yeah, that's strange.
Walking in campaign style to this hangar full of people, thousands of people, and announcing, you know what, I beat Hillary. You know what? He's still running against Hillary. Okay. And I'm saying, all right, the heck with him. That's what he's going to do. What are the Democrats going to do? And here's my solution. The Democrats don't have a candidate for 4 years from now, right? They don't know who's gonna be the candidate. So how can that person walk in and have a four-year campaign against Trump? They can't. So what the Democrats have to do is take their stars, right? People like Bernie. Don't tell me that Bernie can't fill a hangar like that. Mm-hmm. Or Hillary. Don't tell me that Hillary can't fill a place like that. Or
Cory Booker or Elizabeth Warren or right. Newsom, the lieutenant mm-hmm. governor in California.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. That's right. So what you do is you basically run an ongoing. If he's going to do that, then you do the same thing. You mm-hmm. run a campaign against them using your superstars. Now, to me, the superstars are Barack Obama, Michelle Obama,
absolutely.
Hillary, Bernie, just for starters. And those people, they can fill tens of thousands of people, and people will turn out. That's what I'm thinking.
You should run for head of the DNC. I hear they're looking
for
someone.
You think they're looking for 75-year-olds?
No.
Mm-hmm. Well,
but
Bernie,
you're young at heart, you tell us.
Yeah.
Those are good ideas.
You can run the Comintern.
I think that
that's funny, Ray.
I think that Trump is bringing to life in a way we haven't seen before the idea that an incumbent has this incredible advantage in the next election because they can use the power of the office. He's using it to actually have rallies and campaign.
I've never seen it before. And by the way, so there's no opposition. There's no effective opposition.
I think you're right on that.
Except for serendipitous turnout. Now, there was a great article in the New York Times which said, you know, it took how long to arrange for everybody to do the mother's marches in Washington. But now, if Trump comes back to New York, the signal, pardon me.
Never stifle a sneeze.
Why not? You blow
your eyes will pop out.
We have a cough button.
You blow your brains out?
That's funny. Right?
Okay. Well, meanwhile, just to give you a chance to collect yourself. Okay. Another one of those things where there's the campaign and then there's the governing. Trump, after blasting Obama for the amount of time Obama spent on the golf course, in his first 31 days as president, 31 days, Trump played 6 rounds of golf.
Hmm.
I think his staff likes this. I think that if he's out campaigning, if he's out playing golf, and he has left them, which I believe was his promise to them to do the governing, we're probably better off.
Yeah.
Or, as Arlo Guthrie once said about Ronald Reagan when he was sleeping during some emergency, I like it when he sleeps. Okay, but the point I was trying to make was that now. You don't have to do any planning. If you announce that Donald Trump is going to come to New York to Trump Tower, there'll be 100,000 people out there, and nobody will have to tell them to get there. You know, the word will get out.
I believe the Times had a story about
this
the other
day. That's what
I'm
talking about, yeah.
Yeah, he has not been in New York since he was elected, and it's going to cost literally hundreds of millions of dollars if he comes in.
Yeah, well, it's true.
Well, our email address is panel@wamc.org, and the stack is really piling up.
Oh, boy, it really is. This is stacked. Okay, so let's see here. I'm progressive, concerned about the environment, but we need to be honest about the benefits of fracking, which include energy independence and natural gas instead of coal. I'll take fracking done carefully.
Well, that's the point. If there's one iota of a mistake, then there goes the water supply.
And there goes Oklahoma,
earthquake.
Yeah, that's the one I meant. Earthquakes. Yeah, that was good. Okay. Good morning, panel. I find it so disheartening to hear complaints of illegal immigrants as I did yesterday. Give me a break. Unless you're a Native American, you're illegal. This country was formed by the violent robbing of this land from its original inhabitants, and nearly every treaty made with natives has been broken. Now, again, they're fighting to preserve their ancestral land. To me, the disregard of the Native American peoples is the greatest injustice in our country, and that's Irene in Hillsdale.
continuing till today with the pipeline.
Yeah. Well, that's, I think, a point. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Good morning, panel. Glad to see that Alan is up and about. Rosemary, I have to tell you, Rosemary says, Alan, you don't look well.
Yeah. So you look wan.
Your face is pale. And it's true. I looked in the reflection in the device here. Oh, it's true.
I didn't even know you cast a reflection. Good for you.
That's the second really good one.
Napalese throat singer.
Thank you very much.
Best.
I'll be here all week, and then that'll be fired.
Not at all. But I did forget to bring your paycheck. Good morning, panel. Glad to see that Alan is up and about. British politicians seem to take raucous meetings in stride. Just look at the session in Parliament. Why can't some of our feckless representatives take the heat? And that's from Bob.
Agree.
Okay. And then we heard, how much is Twump? T-W-U-M-P, Twump. Who said that? Which
Elmer Fudd.
Elmer Fudd. How much is Twump making off this project? We must pressure our president to show the people his taxes in capital letter and stock portfolio. Thank you, panel. And that's from Sheila.
Trump firmly believes that only we journalists care about his taxes. You people who he rules over don't care.
And then
he isn't telling us.
Hi, panel.
Hi.
The question many of us want to know is, where is the leadership at the top? I wasn't assured by Paul Tonko's answer to the question, to this question as town hall. I know it is early, but I wish there was more leadership from the Democratic Party. I'm afraid we will splinter. You know, one of the things that really does concern me here is how within our own ranks, there's so much frustration. Those people who have concerns about Trump, there's so much frustration that people are turning on their own. And that they are saying to the radio station where there's been more frank discussion of all of this than anywhere else, you should do more. you should have done more. Well, I mean, it's not acceptable.
Well, okay. There's also, I think we all have experienced it, there is just a fatigue that has set in about not only Trump, but the whole state of where we are as a country, and that we're talking about it every day, and you almost can't get away from it unless you go into a bunker somehow, and it's wearing us down. Do you not feel the same way?
Oh, everywhere. Yeah, yeah. You go into the store, yeah, and clerks are talking about it. You go into classes, and kids are talking about it.
Talking about what?
About politics. Just Trump.
Isn't that
politics
a good thing, ultimately?
Oh, boy. Not in the atmosphere.
Not maybe in the short term, but in the long term?
I think Ray's right. I think it's got to be good.
But you're both right. It's good, but it is exhausting.
It's wearing you out.
Sorry, Eloise says, since when are town halls intended to let us hear from Congress people what they think? We already know what they think. They have websites, email lists, appearances on Vox Pop. Aren't town halls intended to let them know what we think? And that's from Eloise. I take a little exception to the Vox Pop crack, Eloise, and that is that he came on and he got some very, very tough questions one at a time, and he answered them. So take it back.
Okay. I don't know if that was a shot.
I didn't think it was a shot. No. But is he or she?
Well, you don't compare having a website with appearing on Vox Pop, I hope.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Okay.
All right.
I
steady.
By that.
Steady, old boy.
Are you going to tell me to do something?
No, you'll make it.
Calm down?
Take the meds. No.
Okay. Okay, here we go. Ray does a wonderful job of herding the RT cats and keeping the frogs in the basket. Kudos. And that's from Bob.
All right. Thanks, Bob. Appreciate that.
That makes me want to turn on you.
You usually do eventually. It's amazing. It hasn't happened yet.
Yeah. Well, you never know when it's coming with her, with Rosemary. But you'll get yours.
Yeah, well, you betcha.
Okay. And so Jamie says, after a brief illness, just for your information and wondering what thoughts you might have, Alan Combs has died.
Oh, no kidding.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I didn't know that. We have a confirmation on that. Oh.
Could anybody remind me who that is?
Alan Combs was a commentator. Left wing, moderately so, and he was the original co-host with Hannity on Fox News of a back and forth show.
Long ago, entertaining show. Yeah. Good show.
Not that old.
He wasn't that old. Yeah, no, that's what I was. No. Of course,
but
I've not heard that
anywhere else.
Yeah, well,
I'll look it up while you're chatting.
Okay, fair enough.
And I don't like the fact that his name was Alan, and that Rosemary was just saying you look terrible, Alan, and you have a brief illness here. And you're going to...
You're still alive.
You're projecting.
Our time on this earth is fleeting, and you are still with us, sir. Be in the moment.
I didn't say you look deadly. Oh, my God, Alan, are you dying? I didn't say anything like that.
Yes, he did. Alan Combs dead at 66.
Alan Combs dead at 66.
Okay, Nanny, no, James says, I'm so sorry. I think that DNC debate, by the way, folks, another new rule.
Okay.
Do not put commas after your last name and your first name, because I'll read it as if your last name is your first name.
Okay.
Don't you see?
Yeah, no, it makes
don't
sense.
Don't do that.
Okay.
I also think that the DNC debate is a result of the DNC hacks, where many liberals felt the emails revealed that the party was unfairly tipped in Clinton's favor against Sanders. The DNC is likely trying to repair the perceived damage from Wasserman's tenure, and that's from James.
Interesting.
And that's all. That's
I don't
all
know if you guys saw this.
Yeah.
This was the news of the day for me. For the first time, astronomers have discovered 7 Earth-sized planets orbiting a nearby star.
It was terrific.
And these new worlds could hold life. NASA and the Belgian-led research team announced the news yesterday. It's a cluster of planets about 40 light years away in the constellation Aquarius. They circle tightly around a dim dwarf star called TRAPPIST-1, barely the size of Jupiter. 3 planets are in the so-called habitable zone, or the Goldilocks zone, as they say, where water and possibly life might exist. The others are right on the doorstep. Scientists say they need to study the atmospheres before determining whether these planets could support some type of life. Last spring, the University of Liege reported finding 3 planets around TRAPPIST-1. Now the count is up to 7.
Whoa. I have a number of things I'd like to say.
Yeah.
Number one, I'm going, and I'm coming back in 4 years. Number
40.
Two,
40
no,
light years,
40
dude.
40 light years.
No, but I'm coming back in 4 years. Don't you see? There's a political.
I see.
I got it.
Thank you, Rosemary. I appreciate that.
Okay.
Very much. Number two, Ray, you've been hosting our astronomy show for years and years with Bob Berman.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had spectrum analysis through the whole universe.
No, we haven't.
You know, we have. We've been putting this stuff out to find out if there's any life on other planets. Are there any radio beams? We have found nothing. So why, if this is relatively close by, haven't we found this? Well, you're looking perplexed. Now you're looking at Ira and Rosemary to get you out of this.
They don't care. See, that's the difference.
Yeah,
they don't care.
I'm sort of interested, but I have no knowledge of this.
Bob Berman, I like listening to him, and it's like listening to a magician. You know, the stuff you can't see. I never see the comments they tell you about. Spectacular. I never see that stuff. I don't get telescopes. It's outside of my whole realm.
Ponder this, though.
There is a study or some
sort of a scientific study that Berman relates occasionally that says we know roughly 0% about the universe. We know if it's that huge. So if we know 0%, what can you really say?
Good point.
I'm going to wait for the fellow who's very good at this on TV, DeGrasse.
Oh yeah,
very
wonderful.
Entertaining and educational.
So none of you really care about this.
I care, but
you.
But if we find life on any other planet, any kind of life, microbial life, isn't it a game changer?
I'm far more worried about killing off the life on this planet, which seems ever more possible.
What if we go? Just try this one on for size. It's from a 75-year-old. What if we go to one of these planets? And we find that they've been around a long time, that they have developed the ability to get along, long done with nuclear and all the rest of this stuff. And now they say, when you get there, oh, and by the way, we all live to 350 years at least, and we can help you.
Sounds
That's
like
why
Arrival.
I'm going.
It sounds like the plot to Arrival.
Yeah.
Well, I thought you were going to say, what if we send a rocket there and you establish a WAMC repeater? And then we have yet another. Can you imagine how much money we would get in the fund drive?
Number 30.
All right, well, we're going to leave it on that shot. I got to say, we can't do better than that. Ira Fussfeld, you'll never be on again, but thank you for being here. Rosemary Armeo, thanks again.
I'm never going to be on again either.
We're going to let you on again.
Right,
Alan, you too. The email address, once again, if you want to weigh in, we won't read it till tomorrow, panel@wamc.org. It is the roundtable. There's so much more to go. We'll be back.